Imagine trying to deliver 6,000 liters of free water to thousands of specific households every single month, knowing that if you accidentally subsidize the wrong neighborhoods, I mean, the entire city basically goes bankrupt.
Yeah, it's a terrifying logistical tightrope.
Exactly. And that is the reality of South Africa's national indigent policy. Welcome to today's deep dive, where we are pulling apart the municipal guidelines behind this framework. Our mission for you today is to explore this fascinating kind of hidden machinery a government uses to actually deliver free basic services to its poorest citizens, you know, keeping the lights on without collapsing the local economy.
It really is this massive logistical puzzle because, you know, we constantly talk about constitutional rights as these grand sweeping ideals,
Right.
but this documentation gets into the actual plumbing, the real nuts and bolts required to make those rights a reality on the ground.
Right, the plumbing. And the first hurdle there is just defining who even qualifies, right? Like, who is indigent? The policy suggests a combined monthly household income threshold of about R1600.
Which sounds straightforward on paper.
Right, on paper. But applying that flat number is honestly like trying to draw a rigid boundary line on a really windy beach. You set the R1600 mark, but then the actual tide of human living arrangements completely washes over it.
Oh, absolutely. It gets so messy.
Yeah, because how does a municipality measure that income when a single property has like multiple informal backyard dwellings, or when they're dealing with a child-headed household that has zero formal paper trail?
Well, that's exactly why the guidelines explicitly warn against treating that R1600 as this rigid national mandate.
Mm.
I mean, municipalities have to constantly calibrate that line based on their own localized financial realities.
So it's a moving target.
Exactly. If state pensions increase or if, say, the local tax base shrinks, the municipality has the authority and really the obligation to shift that threshold so they don't overextend their specific budget.
Okay, so once they somehow define that target, the next step is actually moving the resources. Delivering that 6,000 liters of water for a household of eight and the 50 kilowatt hours of electricity without massive benefit leakage.
Right, and they typically use consumption-based block tariffs or geographic targeting for that.
But wait, looking at the preference for means testing in the guidelines, I have to push back here. How is a struggling municipality supposed to pull off that level of complex administration?
It's a huge challenge.
Because means testing requires robust databases, constant auditing, seamless communication. Let's be real, a lot of these towns simply do not have the administrative muscle to maintain that infrastructure.
No, they don't. And the policy actually acknowledges that capacity gap. If a town lacks the bureaucratic capacity for intricate billing systems and continuous means testing, they fall back on something called service level targeting.
Meaning they alter the physical delivery method itself?
Precisely. So instead of wiring a house and checking the resident's income every 6 months, they just install communal standpipes for water.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, by providing a basic service level that honestly only appeals to those who genuinely have no other options, the physical infrastructure does the targeting for you, completely bypass the complex individual billing system.
Right, but providing a communal standpipe is just triage. I mean, it handles the immediate survival crisis of dehydration or sanitation, but it does absolutely nothing to alter the economic reality of that household.
And this is where the guidelines introduce the social package of services. The framework is very clear that free basic services cannot operate in a silo.
They have to be connected to other things.
Exactly. Handing out 50 kilowatt hours of electricity has to be physically and administratively linked to broader poverty alleviation programs. So, housing developments, health initiatives, local economic development projects.
So the municipality isn't just managing this permanent list of dependents. They are actually supposed to be managing a pipeline.
Yeah, the official term they use is the exit from indigence. The entire logistical apparatus is built on the expectation that residents will eventually graduate out of the system.
Wow, okay.
Right. The local economic development arm is supposed to foster job creation. So a household relying on a communal standpipe today can hopefully secure employment, move into formal housing, and eventually afford standard utility tariffs. Success isn't measured by how many people are in the register, but by how many successfully leave it.
So why should you care about these guidelines? Because this deeply illustrates how an abstract constitutional right to human dignity actually translates into physical flowing water and glowing light bulbs. It requires rigorous, highly adaptable financial modeling.
It really forces us to look past the political rhetoric and study the actual architecture of social support.
It does, but it also leaves us with this looming structural question to think about. If a municipality's ultimate success hinges on residents exiting the indigent register by finding local jobs, what happens to this entire intricate system if technological automation permanently removes the very entry-level employment those citizens were supposed to graduate into? How do you manage the plumbing when the exit pipeline disappears completely?